Gonzaga for the win. Sabo banks it in at the buzzer. Unbelievable. Jalen Suggs sends Gonzaga on to the championship game.
That is what joy sounds like. Spontaneous, delirious joy. As Jalen Suggs banked in a 40-foot overtime game winner, sending his unbeaten Gonzaga Bulldogs to the championship game against Baylor tonight. And
trapped, heaves, can't hit, that is it! Stanford survives again! The Stanford Cardinal, national champions in 2021!
That's the Stanford Cardinal winning on Sunday night to become your 2021 Women's National Champions. Today, we break down an unforgettable weekend in college basketball and the history at stake tonight. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, April 5th. This is ESPN Daily. Jeff, what time did you get to bed on Saturday night?
3:30. I mean, I was done working at like 1:30. I watched the Jalen Suggs shot probably 50 times. I couldn't get over it. And I woke up this morning still kind of buzzing about it.
Jeff Borzello is a college basketball insider for ESPN, and he's been covering the tournament from Indianapolis. Yeah, I mean, they tell us not to be a prisoner of the moment, Jeff. That's the phrase that always gets thrown around. But there are not many moments in sports history like what happened with Gonzaga and UCLA in the Final Four. You were there. Just broad historical analysis here. What did we witness?
I mean, it was the best game I've ever seen in person or on TV. And it wasn't a game where a great ending masked a, you know, sloppy but close game. This was just unbelievable basketball for 45 minutes. Both teams just making shots. No team led by more than 7 points. The tension and the butterflies I had throughout the game, it was just unlike anything I've witnessed. And, you know, the shot at the end just kind of capped it all off.
You just mentioned that shot by Suggs. Walk us through it from your perspective, what you were seeing.
I knew we were good because it was in Jalen's hands. He's got that magical aura. He makes them in practice. You know, all the time. It's been crazy this year how many he's made in practice where we're last second shots. So I felt pretty good. I was staring right at it and I was like, that's in. So, and it was.
It was the best game, you know, in my, you know, since I started covering the sport. And, you know, people compare it to the 1992 Duke Kentucky game. I did not see that in person and I was 6 years old, 5 years old. But I can't imagine there are too many games in the history of the sport that were better than this.
Yeah, it felt like the greatest college basketball game that's ever been. I was 7 at the time of that Leitner shot, Jeff, so I'm with you on that. But it was as fun a sporting event as I've ever seen. I'll even broaden it out to that. And I want to get to what happened at the very end because I can't watch or listen to that enough either. So it is the last seconds of overtime. It is tied 90-90. And then it was the moment that had the feel and the sound of like this giant exorcism. Where were you when Jalen Suggs hit that shot, that buzzer beater to win the game? And how would you describe what happened in Indianapolis where you were?
Yeah, so I was in the first row of the media section, which was on the baseline of where Gonzaga was taking the ball out. So I guess I was probably, you know, 20 yards, 15 yards from him catching the ball. You know, in a packed stadium, it might have been just unbelievable euphoria. But the kind of the intimate environment that we have to have, it almost made it feel a little bit more special. But it felt, honestly, so when the ball goes through the net after Zhu Zhang's putback layup.
7 seconds to go, 6 seconds. Zhu Zhang in the paint, fade away. No, got his own rebound. Slithers to the rim and lays it in. 3 seconds to go.
It looked like Gonzaga kind of froze for a second, except for Jalen Suggs.
We're tied at 90. Here comes Suggs.
You know, he started his curl toward the ball to catch it on the run. He catches it. You know, Mick Cronin is telling UCLA to get back, which allowed Suggs to catch the ball on the run with momentum. And he kind of went uncontested for 50 feet. As soon as it left his hands, it looked like it was online. there was something about the way he shot it where it was like, this shot's going in.
Suggs, long three for the win. Oh! Banks it home! Banks it home! Jalen Suggs, a deep banked three to send Gonzaga one step closer to history.
He was speechless after the game.
I still can't speak. I mean, I have a million things going on in my head, and I just can't believe that happened. I don't think it's really going to hit me, you know, until I wake up tomorrow.
It's really hard to describe just kind of the vibe that he had in the post-game press conference. He comes in, and he's sitting there, and he leans his head back. He's smiling. He's kind of giggling.
So I've always said a football game, a section championship against Bonneau St. Margaret my senior year was my greatest sports moment that I've been a part of. The skyrockets above that. I mean, it was nuts. And
he couldn't really hide his joy, and you know, he shouldn't.
I mean, tonight was special.
It was a really, really special moment in kind of the sports history.
Could you describe for us, Jeff, the play before by Johnny Juzang, like what he tried to do instead of pulling up for what would have been maybe a game winner?
Yeah, I mean, he kind of got the ball in space. The UCLA got a switch, so Suggs got off of Juzang. And, you know, Jaime Jaquez was open for a split second when on the switch. But Juzang was not giving the ball up, and, you know, he shouldn't have, given the way he was playing. He got a runner in the lane, you know, in traffic, missed it. But because two Gonzaga players went to contest his shot, he got an easy offensive rebound and put back to tie the game. But, you know, there was a strong part of me. And UCLA was not really settling for pull-up threes. They took a lot of contested two-pointers all night.
So many, Jeff. I don't know if I've ever seen a team shoot that many high-difficulty, like, mid-range shots in all varieties and forms.
It was a very, like, 1980s NBA type of offense. I mean, everyone talks about threes and layups now, and UCLA was like, no, we're going to take all mid-range contested twos. I mean, Cody Riley, the lefty big man for UCLA, he hasn't come close on shots outside of 4 feet all tournament, and he was just burying mid-range shots with confidence all night. Mick Cronin had just kind of a tremendous game plan to keep them in the game, and Juzang and Jaquez and Tiger Campbell just made tough shots all night. And you know, I think everyone assumed Juzang was taking that final shot. And you know, I think Mark Few said it today on Sunday. He said, you know, I don't think either team lost that game. And just one team ended up winning it.
What Jalen Suggs did in this game and throughout this run now of Gonzaga's undefeated season, when you watch him, what do you notice the most?
I think it's his speed. I mean, his. I don't know if he's, you know, the fastest player I've ever seen, but he moves from end to end with the ball in his hands with such aggression, with such explosiveness. When he gets the ball in transition with a head of steam, you know, I don't know if I've seen a player like that. You know, one coach in the WCC compared it to Derrick Rose, early career Derrick Rose, I'd imagine. But, you know, he changes speeds. He puts so much pressure on the defense when he kind of gets going downhill. And there are very few players, you know, that can kind of stay. I mean, he's 6'4". He's strong. He's a former football player. He's not a 5'11 kind of jitterbug. He could run over guys. And he's incredibly physical.
He was the Mr. Basketball and Mr. Football in the state of Minnesota in the same year.
Yeah, I mean, he's an incredibly physical, like, he overwhelms people. You know, defensively, he's not a lockdown defender, but he's aggressive, he's physical. He'll take the ball from you. You know, Juzang had a couple of stretches in the second half where he couldn't really get a clean look because Suggs was just overwhelming him physically. He was a top five recruit, and he's going to be a top five NBA draft pick. But he's taken a back seat a lot this season. You know, Corey Kispert won player of the year. Drew Timmy's been their best player in the NCAA tournament. He's fine getting, you know, 9 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, but he can also go out and get 25 points. He can take big shots. And he's been a winning player ever since high school, AAU, football, basketball. He's just a complete package. He's just, you know, he wasn't great for most of yesterday, but special players can make plays like he did, and he just made a few of them, and that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, I want to talk about the rest of the Bulldogs because they played so well, and it's rare to have a team play that incredibly well, to shoot that well with Kispert and Timmy, being really impressive while also playing in a game that is this close. So what UCLA did here, Jeff, in a game in which Las Vegas had given Gonzaga, I believe, like the biggest point spread in a quarter century, how would you describe the run of UCLA culminating in a game like this?
Yeah, I mean, we have to kind of put in perspective what Gonzaga's done all year. They've had one single-digit game. It was against West Virginia in a game Suggs got hurt in 4 months ago. Nobody's come close. BYU led them by double digits in the WCC title game and lost by double digits. So it's been impossible for any team to stay with them. Going into this game, Oklahoma probably played them the toughest, and they lost by 16. So I think we kind of have to establish how good Gonzaga's been all season and how nobody's really been able to, dictate anything against them. And UCLA, going into the game, this is a team that lost four games in a row before the tournament. There was a chance they didn't even make it. And then they get down by 13 to Michigan State in the first half of the first four game. And it was like, okay, this, a fifth loss in a row, they're going home. And the job Mick Cronin's done, the job Johnny Juzang has done, Jaime Jaquez in the five games since then, the five wins in, I think, 12 days, it's been one of the more impressive runs because it's not been a run where they're beating, double-digit seeds, and not to take anything away from what Houston did to get to the Final Four, but UCLA, they beat a good BYU team. They beat Alabama. They beat one-seed Michigan. They took one-seed Gonzaga, maybe the best team we've seen in 15 years, more than that, to the wire. It was a complete masterclass in kind of a game plan. I know they came up short, but it's as close as anyone's come all year to beating Gonzaga. And it was an unbelievable performance. It really was kind of just a classic kind of boxing match where both teams were landing punches. And you knew kind of whichever team had the ball last or whichever team could throw the final punch would win it. And that's what happened.
All right, Jeff, coming up, I want to ask you how Baylor might formulate a game plan to try and knock out Gonzaga.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Jeff, tonight's a weird thing, man, because we just came off of the game of our lives, but that was the semifinal. The final is Baylor and Gonzaga, and this is seemingly the matchup that the sport had been looking forward to for a very long time.
Yeah, it's weird. It's kind of like, when do we turn the page from the classic that we had on Saturday night? But this is maybe the most hyped or most wanted, most the game the sports demanded. I mean, it's probably the best game we've had since maybe 2005, when Illinois played Carolina in the title game. Those two teams were 1-2. For most of the season, those two teams were 1-2 going into the NCAA tournament. Gonzaga and Baylor, they were 1-2 at the beginning of the season. I think we established probably after the first week of the year, we knew these two teams were the best in the country. And for a while, it looked like it would be two undefeated teams playing in the national championship game. Obviously, Baylor, they had their COVID pause and that they kind of had some struggles after that. But, looking back, these two teams were scheduled to play in December, got canceled due to positive tests. Throwing the questions of, are we going to get a season or, how is this year going to go? And looking back, I'm kind of happy they never played because it's two special teams. And I know we've kind of talked about Gonzaga in a historical context, but Baylor's not too far behind. If you kind of take out that pause they had when they lost to Kansas in their second game back, they lose to Oklahoma State in the Big 12 tournament. Outside of that, they've been kind of neck and neck with Gonzaga all year. And they're playing like that again. Obviously, they looked far more impressive maybe than Gonzaga did in the Final Four game. They blew out Houston, and I think they're kind of playing with that edge that they were playing with pre-COVID pause. And when Baylor's at their best, they're right there with Gonzaga, and that's why I think everyone should be so excited about Monday night.
Gonzaga on the verge of you know, the first undefeated season in college basketball history in the era of the expanded 64, now 68 team field. Indiana did it when it was 32 teams in 76. What do you think Baylor and Scott Drew, their coach, what are they cooking up for Gonzaga tonight?
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, I keep seeing these kind of tweets about, oh man, if UCLA can score X amount of points on Gonzaga, imagine what Baylor's going to score. And it's like, well, I mean, how much better can Baylor play than UCLA did? UCLA wasn't missing anything. I mean, it's just, I do expect it's going to be a pretty high scoring game. I do think Baylor can kind of go toe-to-toe with Gonzaga when it comes on the offensive end. I think they have enough scorers. Davion Mitchell's been tremendous in the NCAA tournament. Jared Butler's been a player of the year candidate all season long. Maceo Teague has had huge games late in the season. So I think those three guys can go toe-to-toe with Gonzaga's scorers and kind of keep them in this. I think the key for Baylor is going to be what they do to Drew Timme on the inside. He's been dominant during the NCAA tournament. He completely annihilated Evan Mobley, probably the best interior defender in college basketball when Gonzaga beat USC.
Back on top they go. Here's Suggs, a new shot clock with which to work. Timme again turns around by Evan Mobley and puts it up and in.
And Baylor has kind of struggled against elite big guys so far this season. They're kind of small. Mark Vidal is 6'4", 6'5", plays power forward. Flo Thamba plays down low. They're just not an elite interior defensive team. So I think that's going to be key as to what they can do to Drew Timme. Now, at the other end, you can flip it and say, well, you know, can Baylor kind of get guys like Matt Meyer into space and force Timme away from the basket, force Corey Kispert to guard a mobile shot-making four-man like Matt Meyer? But I do think if they can't stop Timme, if they can't slow down Timme, they're going to have a long night because everything kind of plays off him. If he's scoring inside, suddenly you have to throw double teams and he'll find shooters and he'll find cutters. You know, Joel Ayayi might be the best off-ball cutter in the country. And so I think priority number one has to be slow down Drew Timme.
Yeah, it's remarkable, Jeff, how well orchestrated Gonzaga's offense looks and how often they look to Drew Timme, who has all of these like post moves. Like he feels like, I mean, there is a, who do you compare Drew Timme to? If someone out there has not watched this guy go to work in the post, what kind of a player would you describe him as? Because he's projected to be like a first rounder at this point.
It's funny. He wasn't really a top 100 NBA draft prospect going into the month. But I think the way that he played against guys like Evan Mobley has kind of shown that, yeah, he can play in the NBA. You know, he's not a guy that, you know, overwhelms people physically. He's not going to dunk on people or anything like that. He just has just incredible footwork. He plays angles really well. I mean, you know, one coach pointed out to me, he says, I've never seen a guy kind of get along the baseline on one side, you know, move his feet to just end up with clear layups at the other side of the rim. If you watch it, he does it time after time. He's on one side of the rim, kind of seals his guy, ends up on the other side with an easy layup. It's just, he's such a unique player given just how he really operates inside. Off the top of my head, it's really hard to find a comparison just because, you know, I just think it's so unique to find a dominant college player like this who most people did not project as anything close to a first-round pick before this month.
Yeah, yeah. Baylor themselves, I mean, they're coming off of a dominant win over Houston. In that game, we saw Jared Butler, I mean, Baylor's star player, like, really dominate.
Skips it into the left corner. Butler three from there. It's good again. Butler, 15 points.
What is he bringing into this championship game?
The thing I like about Baylor's guards, and obviously Butler is the headliner of it, and it's Mitchell and it's Teague, they just have so much confidence. They don't get rattled. And it's something I noticed kind of mid-season. But there was a play, I believe they were playing either Kansas or West Virginia, and there was a loose ball. Guys are diving on the floor, and Butler gets the loose ball with 8 seconds left on the shot clock. And in most cases, you'll see a team or a player kind of rush it. They throw it to whoever they could find open, and it ends up in the fifth row, and it's a turnover. He made a pass to Mark Vidal, who made another pass, and they got an open layup with about two on the shot clock. That's just something you don't see. They don't get rattled, and a lot of that starts with Jared Butler. You know, he's been around. He's made a lot of big shots in big games. He just kind of just exudes this confidence and this calmness. And a lot of their possessions, it ends up with some false motions. They call it ghost screens now, and it just goes to Butler or Mitchell or Teague, and they say, go make a play. And, you know, more often than not, those guys end up making a play.
From those guards that you mentioned, Jeff, who draws the assignment of trying to stop Jalen Suggs?
Yeah, that's going to be the matchup that everyone wants to talk about. I think it's going to be Davion Mitchell versus Jalen Suggs. Mitchell, You know, he won Defensive Player of the Year nationally. He won that recently. He's been the best perimeter defender in the country. Scott Drew said that they call him off night because so many guys have off nights when they go up against him. Yeah, Mitchell's locked up guys from Moses Moody to Quentin Grimes. I just think Suggs poses a completely different problem for him, given his size and physicality and aggressiveness. It's going to be a different issue for Mitchell on Monday night. But I do think, you know, he relishes those situations. I think he'll want to guard Suggs. And I think at the other end, Suggs is going to want to guard him. That's going to be just a tremendous, tremendous individual matchup. Suggs versus Davion Mitchell, two of kind of the premier guards in college basketball.
So we know what's on the line for Mark Few: perfection, history, the designation of, perhaps, there's an argument there, to be the best college basketball team we've ever seen, on the men's side at least. For Scott Drew and for Baylor, for those who are not as familiar as to what's at stake for that program, what's on the line for Baylor, who hasn't appeared in a championship since 1948?
Yeah, you know, what Scott Drew has done is you know, one of the best, if not the best, rebuilding job in college sports history. You know, when he took over the job, Baylor was just mired in drama and scandal and NCAA violations, and he kind of rescued the program. I think they were down to 7 scholarship players at one point. They weren't allowed to play non-conference games. It was a disaster. And he's turned them into, you know, a consistent Big 12 title contender, consistent NCAA tournament team. Over the last 2 years, they've been, you know, maybe the best team in college basketball outside of Gonzaga, even including Gonzaga last year. They were just tremendous for the first 4 months of the year. And I asked Scott Drew about this, just about how COVID kind of ruined their chances at a historic year last year. It almost ruined it again this year, given the way they played coming back after the pause. They know what's at stake. They know that Gonzaga is getting all the attention. The quest for the perfect season is getting all the attention. But Baylor in their own right has been just an elite team for 2 years now. The thing that kind of, I guess, everyone wants to see is whether Gonzaga can be one of the greatest teams in college basketball history. And Baylor wants to end that.
It is a wildly strange experience, I imagine, for you, Jeff, to be covering this Final Four, as incredible as it is, with a very limited amount of fans at the game, restrictions on access for players, for people in the press like you to keep everyone safe from COVID. What's the mood around all of this as we're on the precipice of the end of the road?
It's weird, man. It really is, especially given what we saw on Saturday night, what everyone's going to watch on Monday night, which, you know, should be one of the most anticipated college basketball games in 20 years. It's such a strange vibe. And, you know, Miley Cyrus performing in between games on Saturday night adds to that.
vibe. Jeff, what is your concert review of Miley Cyrus, having experienced that firsthand?
Well, I will say that seeing live music for the first time in a year was special. I don't know if Miley Cyrus would have been my first choice to kind of come out of quarantine and see, but she didn't play Party in the USA, which I was deeply, deeply disappointed about. But
I would have been too. I mean, if we're all being honest with ourselves, we all kind of want to hear Party in the USA.
Right.
So give me a prediction for this game tonight, Jeff. Monday night, Baylor and Gonzaga for the national championship. Who you got?
Yeah, going into the year, I had Gonzaga winning it all. Going into the tournament, I had Gonzaga beating Baylor to win it all. And I don't know if I've seen anything to make me change my mind.
Jeff Borzello, as this game unfolds and you put your hands up and they're playing your song and the butterflies fly away, I really do hope you nod your head like, yeah.
I absolutely will. I absolutely will. That's a perfect ending.
Okay, up next, I call up LaChyna Robinson in San Antonio, where she was courtside for the crowning of the women's champion, Stanford Cardinal.
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you people wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first one or for your fashionista mom who likes to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate with them both. You can shop by price anywhere from $25 and under to, say, $100 and below. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists like for the mom who has everything. Or even pre-wrapped gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So, what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder.
LaChyna Robinson, we just covered the absurd historic weekend in the men's tournament, and now we come to you because you're in San Antonio, where you just got done calling the women's final this evening, and it was tense, it was thrilling, it was shocking at times, Stanford emerging as champions here, LaChyna. Has your heart stopped racing yet? How are you feeling?
No, it hasn't, Pablo, but I'll tell you, we got as much as we could take. I mean, what a crazy ending. My heart was beating out of my chest. I tweeted that I felt like I was getting ready to be sick. All of those things were true. To have a one-point game with 6 seconds left and Arizona had an opportunity to win it, the ball in Ari McDonald's hands, you couldn't have asked for a better closing to our season or a better NCAA Women's Championship.
Yeah, there were so many swings, momentum changes, lead changes, a couple questionable calls late in the fourth quarter. But at the end of the game, LaChyna, when Ari McDonald had the ball in her hand with the chance to win, what was going through your mind?
A lot of things were going through my mind. One, I was thinking that's where the ball needs to be because Ari McDonald has carried Arizona to this championship game on her back. My second thought was Tara Vanderveer knows the ball is getting ready to go to Ari McDonald and wondering if Adia Barnes was going to try to do something different. But kudos to Stanford for that last 6 seconds of defense. And I read somewhere that in that final huddle, Tara Vanderveer said to her team, this is the last 6 seconds you will have as a team. And they went out and played stellar defense. And Ari McDonald got a look at it, and it was a pretty good one considering how bottled up she was. But what a game.
In Arizona, LaChyna, watching this game, Arizona was the team that had been so good at bottling up Stanford. The turnovers in this game, it seemed like towards the end, every Stanford possession was like this high wire act that ended with Arizona getting the ball back. What did you make of just the defensive back and forth here?
It was a chess match between two incredible coaches. I mean, Adita Barnes has done a great job. Obviously, Tara Vanderveer is the all-time winningest coach in women's basketball. And when you watch the adjustments down the stretch with big lineups, little lineups, you know, we knew coming in that Stanford had the height advantage, and they used their post players so well. When Kiana Williams was struggling, they were able to run their offense through Haley Jones, through Ashton Prechtel. You know, they had options to go to, but when Arizona went small and really started to turn up their defense, their defensive pressure, Tara went from that big lineup to getting her small lineup back in very quickly because she needed a team on the floor that could get back in transition, that could handle the ball a little bit better. And I thought that was a bit of a turning point, you know, but it was fun to watch both of these coaches go back and forth and try to find the right combination of players and try to keep the game at a pace that was comfortable for their individual team. So in the end, Stanford's size definitely won out. I mean, if nothing else, I think the indication is second chance points were 11 for Stanford. You know, they really out-rebounded them by almost 20 rebounds. It's hard to win a game when you get out-rebounded that way.
One of those individual stars in this game was Lexi Hall for Stanford, and she really seemed to power the Cardinal offense. What made her such a special player to watch throughout this tournament run?
You know, Tara talks a lot about Lexi and Lacey Hall, the twins. Not only that they obviously have a connection on the floor, but just their mental toughness. And she told us on several occasions that nothing fazed them. And you can see that with Lexi. I mean, you know, she does the little things. She's a stat sheet stuffer. She can dish the ball. She can rebound it. She's got good size on the wing. And was really aggressive about looking for opportunities to score. You know, we saw her really take her place in the Stanford roster, one that has a lot of options. But I thought Lexi stepping up and establishing herself as a go-to player on both ends of the floor. Heck, she locked Zaya Cook up at the end of that South Carolina win. So she deserves a lot of credit for the success that Stanford has in getting this national championship.
The road to this championship, LaChyna, involved 90 total days on the road for Stanford this season. Home games, few and far between due to COVID restrictions, played a lot of different places. Their senior guard, Kiana Williams, she got to win this in her hometown of San Antonio, a homecoming of sorts, and she used her time post-game to shout out her coach, Tara Vanderveer, the aforementioned legend, who won her first title for Stanford since 1992.
It starts with her. It starts with T-Dog. She's a great leader, a great coach, but an even better person. And we know that she cares about us as people, not just as basketball players.
What does this mean for this program?
Starting with the amount of time they were on the road, Pablo, I believe that that's why Stanford won this national championship. They learned what resilience really meant. I mean, anytime you're away from your home arena, you're in different hotels, you can't see your family and friends. I mean, they were battle-tested mentally over the course of this season. And I know all teams were, but nothing like what Stanford had to endure. So I think that was a big key to them winning. We saw them get behind several times down the stretch, but they've just got a fighter's mentality. And I believe that that has everything to do with them being displaced during the season. You know, Kiana Williams has been outstanding for this team all year. I do think she had a lot of pressure on her shoulders. And winning this championship right here where she grew up, just a few miles down the road from where she played her high school basketball. I mean, look at Stanford's depth, their ability to go 11 deep in a national championship game. No one does that. I mean, most coaches at this time of year are tightening their rotation, but Tara Vanderveer went 6 deep on the Pine. Just incredible. But for Tara to finally get back and win a championship is great for the Pac-12. It's great for Stanford's program because she's been at it for so long. But if you were to ask Tara about the time between championships, she's the kind of coach that just has so much balance. I mean, she loves music. She loves the art. She's a basketball coach, but she's just very balanced and doesn't put all of her eggs in one basket. Enjoyed life to the fullest in every aspect. Now, don't get me wrong. She's quite the competitor and clearly has done a great job as the conductor of this orchestra, as she calls it, her team. But in the end, she's just someone who understands how to motivate her players, but also didn't put too much pressure on herself or this team. And that really helped.
LaChyna, you mentioned eggs in a basket. I'm going to assume that was an Easter pun, and I will applaud you for doing so, whether that was intentional or not.
I'm taking the credit for it, Pablo. Just let's move on. I'm taking the Easter credit for it.
You also mentioned another phrase, fighter's mentality, and it's really hard to not be impressed still by Ari McDonald and her coach, Adia Barnes. LaChyna, it felt like this was a national coming out party for two people who are obviously already well-established figures in women's basketball. But when you look at Arizona and what Adia Barnes has built there, what do you have to look forward to in the years to come here?
Well, Adia's picked up a lot of fans. And obviously, Ari has as well. The unfortunate part for Adia is Ari will be taking hers to the WNBA. But Adia not only show that she's a winner and how she's built this program. I mean, 5 years in Arizona and she gets this team to the national championship. Incredible. Like, that just doesn't happen. And she did it through the transfer portal, used that brilliantly. Ari is obviously a transfer, Trinity Baptiste, Bindu Yaney, Shayna Pellington. So she had to go out and convince some really good players to believe in her vision. And she got it done. You know, not all the way, didn't win the national championship game, but it's going to be much easier for her now to recruit. I'm sure her phone is already ringing off the hook. She's just so authentic and true to who she is. I know some people were upset that she used a couple curse words. Well, guess what? That's part of the game. You know, she's talking to her team. She is just very straight to the point. She's not someone that gets nervous or rattled, so her team always feels comfortable. You know, coaches them to play with a chip on their shoulder, which she did so well. But she's also a mom, and she's also, you know, a woman of color, really blazing the trail for other Black women that hope to get to this point where they're playing for a national championship and hoping to get the kind of opportunity that Adia got at her alma mater. So I don't think there's a better story than one of the greatest players in Arizona history coming back to coach and leading her team to the national championship game after 5 years. I hope she's getting paid. That's all I got to say. I hope she is really getting paid.
Are you going to get some rest tonight? We asked Jeff Borzello, our colleague, what time he went to bed after Gonzaga UCLA. He said he got there like before 4 a.m. So I'm just wondering, what's the forecast for LaChina Robinson in San Antonio tonight?
It is 9 o'clock local time, Pablo. As long as this season has been, and exciting, but long, LaChina may be in the bed by 9:30.
LaChina Robinson, you have earned your rest. Thank you for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.